I guess we're starting.
Okay, now we're on. Okay. So, you Long go in...
Talk Radio.
We've been talking about an article that I wrote for Op-Ed News.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
And tonight's guest, Danny Whale. I'll make a. How are you doing tonight, Ruthann?
I am absolutely great. Believe it or not, it was way up in the 40s today, and I spent a lot of time outside with just two shirts, a long sleeve shirt and a t-shirt over it, no jacket,
right.
Nothing. I was good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's
not very
seasonal. It's been a bizarre news cycle. I guess a lot of it was a mass distraction regarding a movie from Sony Pictures, The Interview, and North Korea. Sort of distracting nonsense. A lot of both liberal and right-wing talk, talking about how if the movie isn't released, it's an attack on freedom of speech and so forth. Is that Sony Entertainment's not even an American company, it's Japanese. And I wouldn't really call it a punishing freedom of speech, because I'm sure the thing will end up online anyway, even if it didn't get theatrical release. You know, it's more like Sony wouldn't be able to make a good profit from this movie, which is not a high-budget picture by any means. I think it was $42 million. For Hollywood,
I
think that's nothing.
For
you
how
know.
You can see it.
You already saw it?
No, there was something online just before I came on the other show that about it, about how you can see it. So this is just a crock. It did distract a lot of people. And Sony, from what I read, Sony says that it had to be an inside job. So
I've come across some suggesting that it could have been disgruntled employees that are responsible for the hack. It may have been North Korea. It may not have been. I mean, regardless. If some other country made a movie about executing an American president, that would piss off people here. I mean, so of course you could see it being offensive.
It's very tasteless.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, of course, I do think the North Korean reaction was kind of childish, but still, you know, I mean, can kind of understand their paranoia after years of imperialism. Bashing away at their border. Yeah. So, of course, you know, I mean, I'm not in love with North Korean society, but, I mean, I could certainly see why people there would be offended. You know, it's a stupid news story, and it really took up a lot of the news cycle. And it just gives us a chance to flex our muscles and make it sound like North Korea is a bad guy and why we need to build up our military presence there, which we have been. Shift to the East or tangent to the East or whatever. And we've been building up our military presence because we want to contain China. Yeah. And North Korea is just kind of an excuse. The Japanese want to get rid of our military base in Okinawa. That was actually, I think their last president ran, that was part of his platform, and he had to resign and step down because of his failure to do anything about the U.S. base there. Yeah.
Not popular at all. No.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be. Don't blame
us at all. No, it's a crazy story. I guess I was going to say something briefly about libertarians and so forth. Yeah, I think one argues with them online all the time or in person. And anarcho-capitalists, libertarians, they don't seem to get the basic notion that you do not own the result of your labor. I mean, for some reason, that just they can't grasp it. Maybe it's because we've lost so many manufacturing jobs and we're more of a service economy. you know, then it was more tangible. I mean, if you're in a manufacturing plant and you work on a car, that car belongs to General Motors or whoever you're working for. You can't take
yep.
it home. You don't own the result of your own labor. When you're doing service-oriented work or in sales or clerical work or computer programming, engineering, you know, you think you own the results of your own labor, but you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Who you're working for does. But, you know, but, I mean, if you're in that mindset, that false mindset of, oh, well, I own the work, the result of my own labor, and I'm being paid what I'm worth, which you're not. If you were paid what you were worth, the company couldn't afford to hire you. That's
exactly.
another thing.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Well, but anyway, it's my standard of living must be going down because it can't be the people I'm working for. you know, so it must be the currency. It must be the government's, Federal Reserve's fault. I have to escape the dollar. You know, so you know, so it's there's some hidden inflation in there. Making everything too expensive. So they fool themselves into believing the blame goes on the Federal Reserve and not the capitalism. And they believe that Bitcoin or something like that will give them great freedom, which, of course, is a joke. I mean, when Forbes magazine has a Bitcoin revolution on the front cover, it's not a revolution. When corporate America says, oh, wonderful, you know, you're not escaping corporate America. You know, I mean, that should be, you know, but they really have to lose
yeah.
themselves, you know. And the funny, and the irony of it all is that the private sector has pretty much convinced the population to boycott cash. So, I mean, the whole population has been convinced to boycott cash anyway and been sold into using debit cards and credit cards and other methods of electronic payment and PayPal, where you have all these people making tons of money, you know, off of slices of transactions electronically, which is a hidden inflation, a hidden cost, you know. Not to
yeah.
mention you're giving up a bunch of privacy when you sign up for one of those things. You know, I mean, so... What a joke. So the private sector has convinced America to boycott cash. We don't use cash anymore, and has also found another way to get people to hate the cash. Well, the cash is also making you a prisoner. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what an amazing con job on the public consciousness that people need to wake up from it. And the other thing is this bizarre belief in free markets. You know, I mean, I was arguing with one, and remember we even had it happen on the show over a year ago, but it happened to me just recently again regarding this regulations, you know, I mean, safety regulations, for example, food safety regulations.
Mm.
You know, these aren't things that the government manufactured to take away our freedom, as some bizarre libertarians argue. Basically, these are rules and regulations our parents, grandparents, and great-great-grandparents fought for, you know, because people died, you know. So they demanded, you know, make sure the products from these companies are safe. You know, and some guys argue with me, the introduction of regulations creates tainted food. Because then businesses get corrupted, and it's bizarre. You know, I mean, it's a really... Unfortunately, the right wing has a very strong ideology, even though it's a very false one, and it becomes like a religion to the people that follow it. And the left, unfortunately, lacks a strong ideology. When I say the left, I mean liberals and so forth, not the far left, which are inconsequential, unfortunately, until we grow our numbers. You know, because liberals believe in basically, well... You know, the capitalism is fine. Just perhaps we can make it behave better. That doesn't come across as a very strong ideology. You know,
yeah.
What's that? Yeah, it doesn't. Doesn't
Band-Aid.
Come across as. Yeah, it's
yeah.
Band-Aid, but a band. It's not a strong ideology. You know, and so it doesn't have the strong language that the right does, and hence the politicians come across as technocrats. You know, we're on the other hand, the right wing politicians come across as having an ideology, you know, the faith in the free market, and it works. It convinces people, you know. And the left needs to start talking about alternatives and recapture the old. Yes, that means going back to Marx and so forth, but also look at the new too. I mean, economics is. Not a science by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, the right-wingers have fallen in love with Austrian economics You have Keynesian economics. I mean, economics likes to call itself a science, but it's not a science when you have different schools of thought that totally disagree with each other. You don't have that happen in physics. You don't have classical mechanics versus quantum mechanics. That's nonsense. I mean, you know, basically, classical mechanics, Newtonian mechanics, appropriately describes life. I mean, how objects move and so forth in our regular macro level. When you go to the level of the small, then a different type of physics takes over. Quantum mechanics describes the behavior of motion on the level of, say, the atom. So Newtonian mechanics comes from the old. I mean, you don't have two. My only point is you don't have two different bodies of thought. You don't have people that study traditional anatomy and people that study, you know, analyze DNA fighting each other in biology. I mean, one integrates with the other. You know, and they both form a continuous body of thought. You don't have that in economics at all.
Right.
No. It's economic thought is established by, you know, who's in power. You know. Who can influence? You know, how can you help maintain the status quo? It's hardly a science at all. You know, it kisses up to the rich, and it's full of contradictions because it praises the religion of capitalism. But you know, it's certainly there may be a little bit of something attributable to all schools of thought. Yeah, you know, I mean, people need to seriously talk about alternatives and so forth, and, you know, bring back a strong left ideology that people can wrap themselves around, and develop a sense of class consciousness, which is also lacking big time in this country. You know, nationalism, unfortunately, has wiped it away, so we all think we're one happy family, rich, poor, together, we're all Americans, which is bullshit. No. You have a bunch of elites that have their own self-interest, and they have the ability to influence the politics, and if you have the ability to do it, they'll do it, you know. And which is bizarre, by the way. If another country does it, the right-wingers call that crony capitalism. You know, their capitalism working perfectly, so it must be crony capitalism, but here we sort of... you know, take it for granted or something, or it's just enmeshed in the system and not thought about. And so they get corporate welfare, and it's not even thought of it as that, which far magnitudes of order greater than any welfare that's part of the social safety net. But on the subject of elites and how they influence the politics, subject of today's talk, actually, our guest today is Danny Whale. Danny is a very brilliant activist, labor activist, education activist, and many other subjects too, and also a public attorney. And he's calling us from out of Ecuador.
Yeah.
And he received the Project Censored Most Censored News Stories of 2009-2010 Award for his article, Neoliberalism, Charter Schools, and the Chicago Model. Obama and Duncan's education policy, like Bush's, only worse, which was published on the 24th of August in 2009 on Counterpunch, and you can still pull that up. I strongly recommend, by the way, if you Google Danny Whale, W-E-I-L, besides his articles, you might want to also view his lecture that he gave on a YouTube video. I believe it was called the Corporatization by the Private Raiders. I don't remember now. Danny, what was the name of that talk?
I believe it was called The Corporate Raiders, something to Taking Over Education, but
Attack
it is,
Public Education.
So I don't have it in front of me. It was a couple of years ago, but it people can find it, by, as you say, by just Googling my name.
Yeah, that's what led me to track you down when I saw that video, and it's like, I got to know this person. I mean, I thought that was basically, you learn in a half an hour all you need to know about charter schools and how it's the stealing of the commons and everything that's behind it. And Frank, you name names, which is what you're expert at.
Danny
currently writes for Op-Ed News. He's great. And he's written more than 15 articles for Truthout, where he's part of the Public Intellectual Project of Truthout. And one of the articles you wrote recently was, "Can America Stomach Another Bush in the White House?"
This is wonderful. I already have it on the Progress Toward Democracy Facebook page and Iramarte Fio Facebook page. It is great. And Danny definitely is not afraid to name names or call these names certain things either.
So, I mean, basically, Jeb Bush, well, I said it earlier, he was like the welcome wagon to criminal elites throughout South America and the Caribbean islands, giving them a nice home to stay in Florida, be they people that were under the fascist regime of Batista or exiled criminals from elsewhere. I mean, perhaps you could tell us more, Danny.
Well, certainly. Thank you for having me again on the show. And I encourage anybody that's listening to please feel free to call up and challenge what's being said or add to what's being said or anything that you feel is appropriate. I would like to say, as your intro was very good, a recent article I just posted yesterday, just as an aside, it's called "A Generation of Idiots and the Tools We Worship." And there we see that at the turn of the millennium, the automation of middle-class information processing tasks, as the result is between 2000 and 2010, 1.1 million secretaries were eliminated, replaced by internet. 64% of travel agents, telephone operators are gone. 46% of travel agents have disappeared. 26% of bookkeepers are gone. And this is not just in the U.S. Two-thirds of 7.6 million middle-class jobs vanished in Europe as victims of technology. So really, you're right. People don't know really what's going on in the job market. As more and more technology replaces people, we become road dogs. And that means that the surplus labor, or the amount of people that aren't going to work ever in their life in the United States, and this includes routine cognitive workers as well. They're not just being offshored and outsourced. They're being eliminated by machines. And as a result, we're coming to a point where there are no jobs. And if there are no jobs, there's nobody to consume. And if there's nobody to consume, then what people call capitalism, which we don't have in the United States, capitalism is something that Fitz wrote about. We have state capitalism, which is intervention by the Fed and a number of different agencies to keep the dollar afloat, et cetera. But this turning people into road dogs with no future and no jobs of technology, it's really going to have a profound effect on humanity. But anyway, getting back to the article, it is a long article. I realize that many people don't, you know, read long articles anymore. In the post-Gutenberg society we live in, that's what's so valuable about your show. It's an auditory show, and I think that many written blogs will begin to disappear for YouTube blogs and auditory shows, which is sad for people like me, but I'll survive. The point is yes, Jeb Bush, or the Bush family, let's begin with the Bush family, and many people have written about this, and you can read my article to get the specific names and sites. I'm not going to bore listeners with all the details. But the bottom line is that the Bush crime family goes back at least 100 years, but more important, Prescott Bush, who is the grandfather of George and Jeb and the father of George Bush Sr., was a financed the Nazis during World War II. They had to pass a law to stop him from financing the Nazis. Literally had to pass a law. He's also was the head of Drescher Corporations, which became Halliburton. And Prescott Bush also contributed to what's called the Rat Line. At the end of World War II, or toward the end, actually, he worked with Martin Bormann, who took over Hitler's place in the bunker. Hitler actually gave him permission to set up 750 corporations to get all the gold, all the bullion, all the artwork, all the money out of Nazi Germany to, in Hitler and Bormann's words, to subsidize what they claimed would be a Fourth Reich, And Prescott Bush was very much involved in these corporations, as was the United States, Citicorp, Citibank, because a lot of the money that Hitler, many people want to wonder, where did all the money that Hitler amassed go? It went to neutralize countries, and it was used in the United States to buy blue chip stocks. And so this family, this criminal family, has a long legacy of crime. And that I was writing about Jeb because, of course, he will be running for president of the United States. But the entire family is much like the Giancana family or the Gotti family. It's the same type of thing.
Well, a lot of elites, though, were sort of financing Hitler. It's not talked about as much, unfortunately. I think even Henry Ford was a Nazi supporter, wasn't he?
I heard that too.
So it's which is unfortunate, but yeah, I guess that played a key role in the Bush family fortune.
Oh, absolutely, it absolutely did. And Henry Ford was an out-and-out Nazi. Many people in the elite at the time had a great love since 1922 for Mussolini. Mussolini was a different kind of fascist than Hitler. He was not racially oriented. He was a corporate fascist. And that meant he set up corporations to run his government. And this is what we're seeing in the United States, or have seen now. People don't have any influence in their government. Obama was not elected with $10 contributions. He was elected with bundled money from corporations. Of course, he's doing the job he was selected to do.
Yeah, that leads to another article you also wrote recently, Ready for Hillary Pack, a plutocratic swindle to buy the 2016 presidential election, which
and
we'll get to as well. That one you wrote about a number of the money bundlers. I'm sorry, what?
I said that's on our pages also, and it's not quite as long as the other one, but it hits hard.
It's all worthwhile reading. Now, what were Jeb Bush's ties to the savings and loans crisis going back to the 1980s?
Well, in the 1980s, for readers that or listeners that are not old enough or may not remember or perhaps have forgotten, we had what was called a savings and loan crisis, very much akin to the banking crisis that we see now, though it's not as grave. We used to have, and if you watch the old Jimmy Stewart movie, It's a Wonderful Life, where he goes to the bank to take a mortgage out. Many people believe the mythology that, you know, the bank lives off of deposited monies, and then they lend the money out to deserving working-class people so that they can buy homes that are affordable and then pay, you know, an interest rate on an amortized mortgage. Well, these savings and loans were targeted by both the mafia, and there is a mafia, it's a global mafia now, and also by the Bush family, for decimation and the actual bleeding of funds. Now, Neil Bush, one of the Bushes that many people may know, he likes to visit Asian hookers. He was responsible for the fall of Silverado Savings and Loan in Texas. He milked it, and he then crashed it. But what many people don't know is that it's not limited to Neil Bush. Jeb Bush himself in the 80s was a very, very large part of the savings and loan crisis, milking these banks, stealing their funds, making loans to friends and cronies, and all the names are mentioned in my article, so I'm not going to get into the names unless somebody asks me to, and then I'll be happy to. So Jeb Bush, his father called in a recent dinner, he said, Jeb is the smart one. So I'm going to use the word the smart one, because we're in an age of emperors. And, you know, there was Caligula, and there was Nero, and there was Trayvon, there was a number of other people. Jeb is the smart one. So he talked about as an emperor is the smart one. He is actually much smarter than his brothers insofar as who he's connected to and what he is able to do. So he is basically connected to right-wing, anti-Castro Cuban exiles, drug dealers, terrorists who have blown up airplanes and have now live in Miami as a result of his governorship, criminal enterprises, the CIA, and corruption at the highest levels of government. He did take down the savings and loan, plus the housing of urban development, and he was connected with right-wing Cubans that helped him do it. Now, these right-wing Cubans that helped him do it, like in 1982, the Jefferson Savings and Loan Association in McAllen, Texas, he embezzled over $500,000 to Anacastro Cubans, and then when it came time to bail the savings and loan out, he didn't really have to pony up anything, and we bailed the savings and loans out, and he took the profits. But not only that, he got a $4.56 million loan from Broward Federal Savings in Sunrise, Florida, and his name does not appear on the loan papers. He had a third man as a front, J. Edward Houston, who borrowed the $4.56 million from Broward and then relent it to the Bush Partnership. And this is how they work, with cutouts. Now, not just in the CIA, but also in milking institutions. So you've got Jeb and his brother basically siphoning funds out of institutions and then having the American taxpayers pay for this. There is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation that had to pay all of these savings and loans thefts. And you'll find the Bush name almost everywhere. $285 million in bailouts to just one federal savings and loan that the Bushes stole money from.
Does the Bush family still own this commercial property that the loans were based on?
You mentioned. No.
Okay.
No, they've been dumped. They basically go to the bank with phony papers. They take out $4.56 million in loans from the savings and loan. They get it stamped. God knows what happens to the money. It's funneled somewhere offshore. In fact, Jeb actually admitted last week that he has offshore savings, many of them.
Yeah.
So they're
yeah.
funneled off in offshore savings accounts, and then they throw up their hands and say, "Oh, we can't make the payments." And then, of course, we come in with our tax money, and we bail them out. Now, we did this with International Medical Centers, which was the largest health maintenance organization for elderly in the United States. I mean, I want to repeat that. This is the largest one in the United States in the 1980s. Who ran it? Jeb Bush's business partner. Now, his name is Rick Carey. He's gone. He's in jail. But Bush never goes to jail. Bushes never go to jail. They have third cutout people that will take the fall for them. So that's kind of the story of the savings and loan, just in a nutshell, and people can read the article if they're interested in this.
How do these guys prevent themselves from getting any investigation ongoing? Like, I mean, nothing. It's just the influence they have?
It's the influence, and it's the legacy, and more than that, it's the fear. Because the Bushes have been connected to the Nazis and really an underground Fourth Reich, and I know people may have a difficult time understanding this, but when Bormann set up the 750 corporations in 1945 and got the money out, a lot of it went to Argentina, and Bush, of course, we'll talk about this later, is connected very heavily to Argentina through Florida. And fascists that work in the Mercedes-Benz dealerships, factories down there. But we'll talk about that. So how do they get away with it? Basically, fear. If you cross one of these Bushes, you don't know where you're going to end up. I mean, they have so many powerful friends that are violent. I mean, these Orlando Bosch, who is a well-known figure in the anti-Castro community, he actually blew up a Venezuelan Airlines with 79 people on board.
Right.
Instead of going to jail, he was invited to Florida by Jeb Bush. He lived in Florida for a small time before the father, George Bush Sr., not only granted him clemency, but also gave him full citizenship. There's a pile of this filth in Florida. They live there. And if you cross them, And we can talk about this a little later, of how Jeb Bush actually stopped the recount in Florida in 2000. People don't understand, Nader was not responsible for the loss to George
no.
W. Bush. It was Jeb Bush and what's called the Brooks Brothers Revolution, but we'll talk about that. So they're very, very dangerous people. They're not just corrupt, they're dangerous. People disappear, literally disappear in foreign countries. Operation Condor, that Pinochet was the head of. Bush is very well connected with these people in Operation Condor. In fact, excuse me, his brother actually...
No, could you Operation Condor, could you define quickly?
Yes, I'm sorry. When the Pinochet government was selected by Henry Kissinger and the Chicago School of Economics to replace Allende, and Allende was then the democratically elected socialist government in the 1970s. He was overthrown. His palace was raided. A number of corporations were involved. The coup was planned by the CIA. Kissinger was at the forefront of it, but so were the Bushes. And therefore, he became the president, Pinochet, of the government. And they, with the Bushes and the CIA, because you have to remember that George Bush Sr. was not only the head of the CIA, but Ronald Reagan fell off of a horse in 1975, and his son has admitted he had a brain operation. And then people know that Reagan was Alzheimer. He was Alzheimer before he took office. He was a front for George Bush Sr. and William Casey, who ran the CIA. Mm. Now, George Bush was the president in all of 1980, not Ronald Reagan. Reagan was the front guy. This is what they do. And the Bushes were behind it. So the Pinochet government that took power in Chile set up what was called Operation Condor. And it was to go throughout Latin America and even Spain and to murder all leftists that were opposed to the Pinochet government. It was not just a domestic program within Chile. In fact, we have Letelier, who was a wonderful man who was opposing Pinochet, and his associate, Ronnie Moffitt, they were blown up in Washington, D.C. with a bomb in their car as a part of Operation Condor. The two people that have admitted to the bombing were not only given extradition to Florida, they were granted citizenship by the Bush government, and they now live in Florida. They are murderers, self-proclaimed murderers, as many other members of Operation Condor were. Now, people might know that Pinochet was arrested by a Spanish prosecutor because he happened to be over in Europe at the time. This is why the Bushes will not leave the United States. They're scared they're going to be arrested in any country they go to, and we can talk about the Paraguay connection later as to what they've recently done. They just bought 98,000 acres in Paraguay of a land that sits over a water aquifer, but we'll talk about that later. They have passports in Paraguay and passports, and they're known criminals. I mean, it's truly amazing. Most people don't know. The media is scared to cover it. When Kitty Kelly, who is a kind of a sensationalist book writer, but she does do some good work, began to write about this, Barbara Bush got very upset about it, and they go out and they begin to try to destroy her career. They do almost anybody that does real work.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, it reminds me a lot of that story that came out about Mitt Romney that wasn't talked about in the mainstream media but only talked about on some fringe left media. I don't know why I have an echo.
Okay, now that sounds good. Okay.
It stopped. Okay, because it's not coming from the phone. But basically, I guess Mitt Romney's Bain Capital received a lot of funds from oligarchs that were responsible for death squads in El Salvador. The same death squads that killed that Jesuit priest that was a liberation theologist, Oscar Romero. There was a movie made about it called Romero. And that was discovered, and it's in the news, it's published. It was only talked about in Democracy Now. It was completely ignored by the rest of broadcast media, and that's pretty condemning. You know, it's almost like the same type of thing here, you know. And
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't know why the media is that afraid of it, number one. And number two, it just seemed like the more that you shift to the right, the more it connects to really ugly criminal elements. Yeah,
well, you bring up a really good point, and I think listeners need to hear this very, very well. This is all public information. Anybody can print, go find this stuff. I just happen to have the time, and I find it, and I put it together and choreograph it for readers that are interested. But the bottom line is, it is all public information. So why is the corporate media that's owned by six companies in the United States, from book publishing all the way down to records, why do they cover it up? And the answer is very clear. It's fear. Fear that you're going to lose your job, that you're not going to have access to the White House briefing rooms. Like Gary Webb, I mean, he's a perfect example, Dark Alliance, which is being made into a movie now. Gary Webb published much of this stuff in the San Jose Mercury, and how crack cocaine got into South Central L.A., and he was summarily fired due to threats from various people, including the Bush family, because they helped set up the Contras in the 1980s with the help of Ollie North, and Reagan really had nothing to do with it. It was all George Bush Sr. And so he lost his job, and then he was boycotted. He couldn't get a job anywhere, any newspaper. He became a staffer for a little bit in Sacramento, writing a few things for politicians. But his work was destroyed, his life was destroyed, and he ended up committing suicide as a result of it because he couldn't live.
I'd like for Danny to comment on the 14 regional organized crime strike forces, because that seems like that was a horrible thing that Senior just got rid of.
Yes, there's background to this. What we had, there is no rule of law in America. There's only the rule of men, and basically white men. You know, there's no justice and no law. But the bottom line is we did have these 14 regional strike forces all over the United States that were set up to, theoretically, and in some cases they did a good job, to find certain connections in drug dealers that were bringing in basically cocaine, heroin, things of this nature in the United States. Well, the Bush family is connected with these people, specifically in the name of the last, one of the president right before Vicente Fox. His name was Salinas, and his brother was Raul. Raul Salinas was one of the largest drug dealers in all of Mexico, responsible for bringing in just tons and tons of cocaine. Well, he's a good friend of Jeb Bush's and a good friend of the family's. His brother, Gortari Salinas, was the president of Mexico at the time. They invited Jeb Bush and his wife, who is Mexican. She comes from a very violent and drug-infested part of Mexico. Her name is Columba. Jeb and his wife both speak fluent Spanish. They were invited to the Salinas house for a gala get-together after the president was elected. It's the same house where drug dealers also met privately.
Well, after which president was elected?
This is before Vicente Fox, who was the president of Mexico. There was a president called Gortari Salinas.
Okay.
And his brother was Raul. Both of them were drug dealers. Both of them were connected with cartels. Raul is now serving life in prison. Gortari Salinas had to escape Mexico. He lives in luxury in Ireland, where he lives in luxury in Ireland. He stole everything he could from America, from the Mexican people, and then he hand-pointed Vicente Fox to be his successor because he knew that he would never be indicted. Well, these are Bush's friends.
If you're on the run from the Mexican government, you must be pretty bad, because the people running the place south of the border are really bad as it is. So,
But Ruth, getting back to these 14 task forces. Mm-hmm. Now, these were set up by the government, the federal government, to go after high level drug dealers. But as soon as they start poking around into the Bush family, and especially Jeb, because, again, his wife is from Mexico, and they were invited in this gala to go down and sit with these drug dealers and visit with them on many occasions, not just one. As soon as the task force started to get close, they had to be banned. So the first one was banned as a result of sniffing around Gortari, Salinas, and his brother Raul. But then George Bush Sr. came out and said, we're going to get rid of all 14 of them in the United States. We don't want anybody investigating drug dealing. You see, drug dealing, there's no drug war. The Bush family is responsible for picking the Cali cartel in Colombia over the Escobar cartel. That's why Escobar went down. They picked the drug dealers. Do you think this guy Guzman, who was on the run from Mexico, who had billion dollars worth of money, couldn't be found for 14 years? Of course they can find him. They find them when they don't need them anymore. They replace them with lesser-known qualities, and then the whole thing goes on again. And this is why the 14 task force were eliminated, Ruthie.
Okay, they were too successful, and they couldn't have their friends being under suspicion then.
Does Jeb Bush have any... go ahead.
The smart one was involved with these people, especially from Mexico, and you can't investigate them. The only drug war that's going on is between the drug dealers. There's no drug war from the United States. So, in fact, much of Bush's money has been cleared through drugs.
So, I mean, does Jeb Bush, the smart one, have any current connections with the cartels or Mexican leadership that's currently in place?
He certainly does with the Nieto government. He has a great deal of connection. And the Nieto government, as you know, is responsible for neoliberal policies in Mexico. If people don't know what it is, it's the current president of Mexico. 43 students have been murdered in the Oaxacan area as a result of their activities for social justice. And Jeb Bush and his family are very, very, very good friends. You must understand that George Bush Sr., way back when he was moved to Texas as a young man, was connected to Zapata Oil. And Zapata Oil is one of the most corrupt oil companies in the world, and it's owned by the Mexican government. So you've got Jeb, and they're very clever. You don't win if you can't win the 27 electoral votes in Miami, and if you can't win the electoral votes in Texas, you'll never become president of the United States, ever. So the 27 electoral votes in Miami are in Jeb Bush's pockets, and then, of course, George lives in Texas. George Sr. lives in Texas. They've got these two states wired, and they're border states. And they border drug dealing cartels. Florida borders Colombia with an ocean between, and Texas borders Mexico.
Yeah, no, there is actually a strong Colombian population down here, and Colombian groceries and Colombian eateries and so forth. So I'm well aware of that. Interesting. One thing you didn't mention in your article, I'm curious about. Jeb's ties to the family fortune of still in Carlyle Group, the private equity fund.
Oh yes. Carlyle Group is one of the largest. And I think it is the largest. They own, for example, they own Apollo.
Right.
The Apollo Group owns the University of Phoenix. They've recently merged. The Carlyle Group was headed, I'm not quite sure, but still is, by James Baker. Now, James Baker is a consultant, or you might say a consigliere, to the Bush crime family, and he always has been since the early days of the father. He runs the Carlyle Group, or he did. The Carlyle Group is all over the world making deals, looting countries, making loans that can't be paid back, requiring that infrastructure be turned over to the Carlyle Group. There's a number of nefarious things that they do. People can look it up. It's C-A-R-L-Y-L-E, Carlyle Group. And in there you will see, all you have to do is Google it, go to their homepage, and take a look at who supports them, and you will find predominantly the Bushes and also the Saudis. The Bushes are very, very well connected with the bin Laden family. That's why 101 of them got out after 9/11 while nobody else was able to fly. 101 or 120 planes went out. They're all filled with bin Ladens.
Yeah.
Osama bin Laden was George Bush's best friend's brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Carlyle Group is a very nefarious group. And
yeah.
The business of rebuilding countries like Halliburton, they're all intertwined.
Carlyle Group has its fingers in a lot of pies. They own one of the larger nursing home chains in this country, which is very abusive and very totalitarian run. They own Booz Allen Hamilton, the company that works for the National Security Administration that Ed Snowden worked for. I mean, it's bizarre what these guys, they're into everything. And they're collecting a lot of taxpayer money from their NSA activity. That much is certainly they're able to pay. Well, how much did Ed Snowden make? I think $250,000 a year. He got paid very well, a couple $100,000 a year at least. He gave up a huge salary.
Multi-billion-dollar company, multi-billion with a B-dollar company, with tentacles all over the earth. And yes, they're looters. And when they loot, they steal, and then we have to pay to the money that they stole, whether it's a savings and loan or whether it's a Booz Allen Hamilton. I've written an article on them. People can Google my name and Booz Allen Hamilton.
I'll have to.
See the connection with the Carlyle Group. They are very much in the security defense industries. This is where the Bushes love, because they're death merchants. And as a result, they make all their money either off of arms sales or the destruction of countries and then the rebuilding of the countries through Halliburton. That's what Halliburton's all about. They love war, because then they get to rebuild, and they bomb it again, and they rebuild, they bomb it again, and we pay for it all our tax money.
Now, this is interesting. You know, I mean, actually this sort of segues to another article you wrote. Because
I want him to talk about Paraguay. If can, too. We've only got 2 minutes.
Real quickly, let me get this in. Hillary Clinton fundraised at Carlyle Group a few times, I gather. And that's published. So, which is outrageous, right?
The Clintons are connected with the Bushes. Now, let me backtrack and make this point. I need to make this.
Yes, please.
For example, Bush and Clinton smiling and jovial together go over to war-torn Haiti, where Papa Docs have repressed the population. They've stripped the environment of the mango trees. I mean, they forced the people to produce commodities, taking their rice away from them, a number of other things. And they set up what they say is going to be a philanthropic fund. And this is the other thing they do. They pose as philanthropists.
Yes.
They're really philanthropirates. It would be like somebody meeting on the street and saying, I want your wallet, and you with a gun, and you give them the wallet at the end of a gun, and they say, well, there's $100 in it. Here, let me give you two back. You can call me a philanthropist. They steal two back, and they call you a philanthropist. Well, Bush and George Bush and Clinton set up this fund unfortunately, can be very stupid, sent all this money to this phony charity to give to the Haitians. The Haitians live worse now than before the charity's been set up.
Yeah.
The charity is polluted. Bill Clinton's daughter, Chelsea, now works for the charity. All right?
Yeah.
And, of course, there is the notion of Hillary Clinton herself. Now, here's an article on the March of 2014. It says Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton promote higher education. Well, what's this all about? Well, they got together to speak about the globalization of higher ed, and they all patted each other on the back, and they're all support the same privatization efforts globally. Clinton thanked Bush at the start of her speech, citing his focused jab on education and his, quote, passion and dedication to the issue in the private sector. Then Bloom spoke and he said, higher education is an affordability problem. We need to expand access and technology. And then he gives her an award for the Common Core Standards. Right there. I mean, it's right in front of everybody here. Shep turns around and gives her an award. Then they're both in the Presidential Library dedication of former President George W. Bush. And Mrs. Clinton sitting on stage with her husband, and they're all patting each other on the back. Then Clinton gets the Liberty Medal, okay, awarded by the National Constitution Center, which is headed by Jeb Bush. And then the Jeb Bush says, well, I know from different political parties, and we disagree about a lot of things, but we agree about the privatization of education. And then tongue-in-cheek, Jeb says to Mrs. Clinton, and again, this is less than 9 months ago, she says to her, please don't wear her medal in Des Moines, Idaho, the home base of the aspiring presidents. And then they all chuckle, and then Clinton's in the audience, and her husband comes up. This is what the five mafia families did. Well,
yeah.
The five mafia families did. You know, they said we will agree not to compete against each other, and we will look as if we're different to the American people. But we're all in this together.
The uniform. Yeah.
Yeah. The elite.
But that's incest, basically. That's In the last 2 minutes, then could you talk about the Bushes and all the land they bought up? Because, you know, I read about that, and I read that they're doing some fantastic compound and everything there. But they are over this major aquifer. What's this all about, Danny?
Okay, very quickly, there was a court ruling yesterday. A gentleman brought a case against Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld, arguing that they should be held into a Nuremberg trial for war crimes. He lost his case, I believe it was yesterday. People can Google it. Okay, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that George, all these Bushes have a Pinochet problem. They can't travel outside the United States, and they're scared they're going to be tried for war crimes. But what they've done is they went down to Paraguay. They sent Jenna Bush, the daughter, down to Paraguay about 2 years ago, and they purchased 98,000 acres that sits over an aquifer that supplies all the water to four countries. They have it's bigger than Asunción, which is the capital city of Paraguay. Why Paraguay? Because Paraguay is where the Nazi Germans went before even they went to Argentina. Before Eichmann was even found in Argentina, they went to Paraguay to the Catholic Church in the Vatican. So they have connections down there. All right, Paraguay now has a treaty with the United States that the armed forces are allowed to sell anything that they want from Paraguay. They will never be taxed. There will never be any extradition. So now it's become a hubble for arms sales. Former Blackwater does business down there, and they have compounds and airfields, and they have a complete military bases down there. So all Bush has to do is fly from his ranch in Texas. Jeb flies from his place in Florida, which comes down worse, and they will land in Paraguay. They have complete passports. They can't be extradited. Blackwater will do all their security down there, and they control the aquifers that control four different countries.
That is so disgusting.
Good grief.
Really don't have words for nobody should have that much money. Nobody should have that much control. We've got to do away with this. This is just
unfortunately, I mean there's a sizable number of elites that are like them that are equally as bad. You know, but those are the ones that are currently being pushed to be our leaders. There was a recent survey on just rich people, billionaires and millionaires, on who they would want to see as president. And 33% of them want Hillary. And the next one, 16% wanted Jeb Bush. And then after that goes, after that is Chris Christie of Jersey was the third. I think Mitt Romney was in the mix. And you go down, and some of the millionaires actually like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. But, I mean, they have like 4 or 6% or something like that. What is their ranking? So, I mean, the rich overwhelmingly want Hillary. Yeah,
by two times, right?
What's
twice that? As many went as Hillary as Jeb so far.
Yeah, so far. Yeah, so. For, I mean, you simply don't know how the race is going to shake out as we get closer to it. What do you think is going to happen, Danny? What's your prediction?
I think personally what's going to happen, and for all the good people out there that support Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, I certainly my heart is out to that. They don't have a chance. It's a pipe dream.
It's
$4.5 billion to become president of the United States, and there is no way. Now, the entire apparatus of the United States at this point, from the Congress to the judiciary, and by the way, Jeb Bush picked the grandchild of the former military dictator in Cuba, Fulgencio Batista. He picked his grandchild to be the head of the Supreme Court in Florida. He has nothing to do. But he's the son of a former dictator, and dictators are good people, and therefore we're going to make sure. There is the entire apparatus of the United States government is controlled by the plutocracy and the oligarchs. I'm talking about from a state level. They own the Congress. Yeah. They own the judiciary. They own the Senate. They own it all. What they don't have right now, the Bushes, is they don't have the executive branch again. My feeling is the following. The smart one will run on the Republican side. He will pick a Tea Party candidate like a Marco Rubio or perhaps somebody from Texas. He'll pick a Latino. He's got all the support of Telemundo, all of the supporters of the Cisneros group out of Venezuela who owns Univision. He speaks fluent Spanish. His wife speaks fluent Spanish. Okay, and they're going to cobble together the Latino vote, if the Latino vote even comes out. My last poll I read shows that 60% of the people won't even participate. Therefore, it's 40% of the people that will elect one of these people. Hillary, it looks like, will be the one that's going to be running. Why? Because she's the only one that can get the money. And that goes to the other article I wrote where John Corzine, who should be in jail for stealing $1.6 billion of depositors' money, is throwing fundraisers for Hillary Clinton and starting super PACs.
Yeah.
So I believe that Hillary will run against the Bush. The people that will pick the next president of the United States will be the Pentagon and the banks. The Pentagon and the banks know. Well, the banks know that Bill was really good to them. He's gotten over $100 million in speaking fees from them as a result of repealing Glass-Steagall, but they trust the Bushes. The Bushes are a known entity. So the Pentagon loves the Bushes because they love war and so forth. I think that Jeb Bush will be the next president of the United States, meaning that the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative branch will all be owned by the oligarchs.
Well, I mean, they practically already are. It just gets worse.
You've got 2 minutes left. Words of wisdom, Danny.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't hear.
We have 2 minutes left, and do you want to share some final words of wisdom?
Yes, I hope people read the article so that they can see the connection between the Schmitz family and Blackwater, because Blackwater wouldn't exist right now if it wasn't for the taxpayer subsidies from the Bush family that keep
it
alive. And read about the Schmitz. They're married. Columba's sister, who is Columba's, Jeb Bush's wife, her sister married into the Schmitz family. The Schmitz worked for Blackwater, or did. They loved Germans. He was a former attorney general, Schmitz. The father ran on the American Independent Party back in the late 70s, early 80s, and actually made the statement that we need a Pinochet-type dictatorship in the United States. Please read about this, because we're talking about control of the complete armed forces, everything in the United States. So I hope people will take the time to read the article. I understand that the Kardashians' butt shots are somewhat a little bit more entertaining, and that they're probably some swamp people is on TV and a number of other things. But it's time for people to become refugees from slumber and begin to understand what is in store for America. And it looks like it's going to be a Mussolini type of fascism.
Guess we're going. Danny, we have to have you back again soon, because we barely scratched the surface of what you've... Actually, we only talked about part of here. So please come back. We'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Thank
happy
you so
holidays.
Much,
yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks so much, Danny.
Happy New Year.
Thank you,
Danny. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.